pain, you adapt that pain, you go with it. Yeah, and that makes you stronger.
Bruce Lee says,
be like water. Yeah.
Written well. The story was great.
The story ends in the middle.
Yes, yes.
This is Between Pages with Mike and Dula. This month we're talking about Haruki Murakami's colorless Sakuro Tazaki and his years of pilgrimage.
It's a sad story, right?
It's a very sad story,
but some parts they were kind of amusing, as a funny.
Yeah.
Especially when he comes to Finland and he's talking with like these small 10-year girls are asking him where you're from.
Yeah.
And he said, from Japan, and what kind of movie did you watch on a plane? He says, Die Hard 12. You know what I mean?
Right,
just all right.
Everyday thing.
Exactly, yeah. Which is great.
Yeah, because he's talking about high art, like music, Voltaire, these philosophers.
Die Hard.
And he just watched Die Hard on the plane over.
Yeah. And 12, which 12. Doesn't exist.
Yeah,
you know
which doesn't
I mean?
Exist, yeah.
And it's just making fun of it.
But,
you know,
there's, Die Hard 1, 2, 3, you know.
Yeah, because you can't keep track of it. Yeah. I guess that's why he's making fun of it. You know what I mean? I'm impressed with this book, man.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the best book we read on a podcast, but it's well written. It's you know more of this than me, as you being a writer.
It's not even in terms of like, because this is a translation anyway. I don't know what the original writing was like.
Sure, but it's,
but in terms of bringing together all these beautiful things and painting a beautiful image, mm-hmm. it's the best written. It's the most poetic. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So Sarah, his girlfriend Sarah, is the one who urges Tazaki, because he doesn't only visit Koro in Finland,
mm-hmm.
or Ari, you know.
Before he do that, right?
That she was the last person that he visited.
Correct.
And Sarah actually was the one, his current girlfriend, who she wants a commitment from him, but she feels like he's not ready for a commitment because mm-hmm. he has his head in the past somewhere.
Yeah.
And he's all, you know, he's all torn up by his friends leaving him. So she wants to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to help him by finding his old friends and setting up meetings with him to go find them.
She kind of demands from him.
Yeah.
In a nice way.
So Ao is he was the jock in high school. He was very charismatic, sociable, and he became a Lexus salesman not far from his home in Nagoya. And he's done very well for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and visits Ao, and they chat, and it's fine.
But this is where he finds out why he was kicked out.
Why he was kicked out. And what he finds out is that Shiro accused him of rape. He said that, or we find out, I don't know if he says it or if Aka says it, but we find out that when Tazaki moved to Tokyo for college,
mm-hmm.
he had a roommate named Haida,
mm-hmm.
and Haida's weird, we'll talk about him later.
Yeah.
But, so, we have this roommate, but he's living there with a roommate, or a guy who comes over and bums on his couch,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like. And Shiro tells them that she visited Tazaki in mm-hmm. Tokyo, and she spent the night, and during that night that she spent there,
mm-hmm.
he raped her.
He raped her, yeah.
And Tazaki's saying to Ao, no, she never visited me. What are you talking? I didn't know she ever came to Tokyo. I had no clue that happened.
Yeah.
Aka's interesting.
Interesting, but not too much of him. Not much of him was revealed in the story. Just his job.
I identified with Aka a lot, actually, because it talks about how he was an introvert in high school and college, but he was always, you know, outgoing, but he was still an introvert. And he had very high standards for himself and other people. And I feel the same. I felt very connected with Aka.
Mm.
It's interesting that the others were against his work. They look at it as something bad.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, they...
You know, which is... Because it's not something...
They see it as, like, sleazy, almost.
Yeah, yeah. Why would you do that? Why would you teach somebody
to... He's a sellout almost.
Yeah, yeah. Which, and, you know, people pay a lot of money nowadays to have people like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Everybody pays a lot of money. I mean, big corporations pay a lot of money to do things like that. These leadership seminars and things like that.
And they helped, right?
But they do help, yeah. But at the same time, even nowadays, they're seen as... You know, even in the U.S., people see them as sleazy, kind of.
Yeah, which is...
And they see, like, Hillary Clinton, for example, as sleazy for going and doing them.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, what it comes down to is manipulation. He's, and maybe that's why they see it as sleazy. They see it as he's manipulating people. Mm-hmm.
It's true that the winner is sort of writing the history.
Yeah.
And if we would listen both sides from the losers, that would change the whole perspective.
Right. And but we don't have conversations going on right now about race relations in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... You know, that's a product of a big part of history that we've tried to ignore or at least sweep under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
We had slavery here in the U.S. for, you know, a couple hundred years.
And not that long ago.
And not that long ago.
It's not like, you know...
Yeah, and so we're having conversations about it now. You know, I don't agree with the violence and stuff, but we're having conversations about it now, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, that's history that... Us as winners, or our culture as a winner, has said, well, that's going to stain our image as a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just kind of brush over this.
Yeah.
But now, you know, we're finally getting to that point where the other side is telling their story.
Yeah.
And we're listening to the historical perspective of that culture that's kind of been brushed under the rug.
And that's how it's supposed to be. The both sides would need to come with the argument,
and
then, you know...
both sides need to argue. I think that's when... You get,
not argument, like
you get the violence.
Not right? argument. I'm trying to say the both perspective needs to be there.
Yeah,
you know,
they need to have a dialogue. They need to have a conversation.
Yeah. And then when solutions come,
that's where solutions come from. Yeah.
And
that's where people feel included, and you know, like their cultural perspective and their history is important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everybody's. You know.
But then we have, you know, and we talked about this during our conversation with Girl at War a little bit. We have these conversations about national security.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can look at Al-Qaeda or ISIS or, you know, whoever the prime enemy is. It was Iraq at one point. And how, you know, should we be telling their side too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nothing.
And then we try to say we're civilized.
Yeah, we're never going to be civilized.
We went a little too far between the pages, huh?
Yeah.
Which is fine, too. You know, it's so, got to be smooth, right?
Right. So, yeah, and then we get to Ari, who, like we said, she accepted him, and she had her own doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically says, you know, girls have to stick together. There's a different bond between girls.
Yeah.
And you know, I felt like Shiro was lying.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, you thought Shiro was beautiful. She was the most beautiful out of all of us. And I thought you loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, you know, and I loved you and I thought you knew that and you didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back and talk about that roommate, Haida. Because that roommate's very interesting. Because Shiro plays the song that we played, Le Mal du Pays. She plays that song very early on when they're young. And this friend, Haida, who kind of becomes a roommate, he comes over with a record. He's always playing records. And he comes over with a record one day, and it's Liszt's Le Mal du Pays.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, Tazaki gets up and he says, what is that song?
Mm-hmm.
What are you playing? And Haida says, it's Le Mal du Pays.
Yeah.
And Haida goes, oh, I recognize that song.
Yeah, I remember from...
I remember. I had a friend. She played this song all the time. And Haida's very interested in the friend. And he talks about her. He asks about her. All these different things.
And he was not aware yet there that he... was accused of raping her.
I think the rape happened sometime in the same time.
In the same time, exactly.
Because it was in college, yeah.
Correct, yeah.
he has this dream that Haida is basically giving him head.
Well, before Haida.
Before Haida.
In the same dream.
It's that he's having sex
with both of them.
Yeah, both of his old friends, and then
Shiro is giving him head, and her face morphs into Haida.
Correct.
Does he have sexual fantasies about Haida?
Yes.
Did he have feelings for Haida, or, you know, and he was talking about how real this dream felt the whole time.
And even then a reaction, which was not reaction, basically, of the Haida, right?
Yeah.
He didn't came. Like, for days, he was missing or something.
Yeah.
He didn't came to a class, neither he saw him. He disappeared for a couple of days.
And then he came back and told him that...
He's moving back home or something.
He's moving back home.
Or visiting back home, but he's going to stay for a couple of months and never came back.
Yeah.
And so there's a few other things that happen, because Haida tells the story of his father.
Yeah.
His father who leaves university during the protests of the 1960s. He leaves university and goes hiking in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to this hotel where he works for a while. And this guy comes, this old man comes, and stays there, and he asks if there's a piano somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to go play piano, so Haida's father ends up taking him to some school where he can play piano, and the guy apparently has one of his fingers is cut.
Yeah, because he had six fingers.
Oh, yeah. But six fingers.
One he cut away.
One cut away, yeah. But anyway, he plays piano and he's this beautiful pianist, and Haida's father says, "Oh, you must be a famous composer. What is your name?" And the guy won't tell him. He just tells him his name is Green River, or whatever the name is for that. And he couldn't find any records of this Green River. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because his father left university to go traveling about the same time he says that he left, you know, he's leaving to go back home.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this correlation, like, did he tell that story because
he's leaving?
He's leaving to go travel, or...
Do you remember, did the guy that played the piano in the father story, did he play the song? I don't remember.
It didn't say the song,
right? But that was a weird part of the whole book.
Because he was another piano player.
So I was looking for some connection. And in some part of... I didn't even believe the Haida was real.
I was going to say the same thing.
Because it was...
Well, and there was those parts where Tazaki would wake up in the middle of the night and look in the corner of the room and Haida was just standing there.
Which was creepy, you know.
But it's almost like his shadow self, you know, if you know Carl Jung, you have the shadow self. It's almost like Haida was the shadow
seeing
self.
Seeing himself as...
Looking over him.
Yeah.
It was weird. And that's the first time when he had that sexual thing with it.
Yeah.
And when we realize, when I realized he was accused of raping her, he became a suspect. And a big suspect.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I'm thinking, in my head, I'm thinking... Okay, so this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He raped Shiro.
Yeah.
He had her over.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even know about it because he's a schizophrenic or some shit.
And so, you know, when
he sees her doing what he's doing and then morphing into Haida, what he did right then is he created his shadow self.
Mm-hmm.
He created someone who could do something that heinous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because he would never do that. And all his friends say, he had doubts, because you would never do that.
Exactly.
And he even himself said, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Haida did it.
Mm-hmm.
This made-up person did it.
Yeah.
And so that's why there's all these traits that are similar to Shiro that are embodied in Haida.
Correct.
It's constantly there. I'm constantly doubting him.
At the same time, you're like, no, that couldn't happen.
And even though now that I finished the book, I feel the same. I'm like, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, shit. But I do remember him having sexual something with somebody.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that was weird.
Yep.
You know.
Well, that's the other weird thing. The part about... and this is a huge spoiler. But so we find out that Shiro was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when things get, oh my gosh, did Tazaki go and murder her? You know, or if Haida existed, did Haida go and murder her? Because it's never resolved.
It's never resolved, but remember that it was in one part that he's actually thinking, he's doubting himself in one part, saying, is it possible I kill her?
He admits that to Ari.
Yeah, when they talk, but he's thinking like maybe, and then he says...
He doesn't say it in any kind of metaphorical way. He says, Ari, I killed Shiro. I don't even think he says, I don't know, I don't...
It's toward the end, yeah, but...
Wait, I think he just says...
I killed Haida. Like, I mean, I killed Shiro.
Yeah.
Shiro.
Yeah. Shiro.
Yeah. And then Ari responds with...
I killed her too.
I feel that way too. I killed her too. Yeah. I let it happen.
So then when she says that back, at that, because before that, he's thinking about it, right? Yeah. Before he said to her, he's thinking about it. Oh yeah, maybe I was there. I let myself in. She let me in to talk about the rape I committed or whatever.
Yeah.
That's when I kill her.
Yeah.
Like maybe he was about to admit it. Or maybe it was an admission.
Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to say. It still has a feeling that he didn't do it, but at the same time, it's like, it's possible.
He's suspect.
He's suspect. And he's even suspect to himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. It's weird, but it's greatly weird. You know what I mean? And that's why at the beginning we talk about when he was talking with her in Finland, that gives some relief. Because then you're like, oh, we didn't do it. You know, he didn't do it. Yeah. He didn't kill her.
Lamal Dupe.
Yeah.
When maybe he's saying it like Die Hard 12.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just plain and simple. There's nothing, it's all surface.
Yes.
But she interprets it as something poetic.
Yeah.
Maybe the story is exactly as it was written, and nobody knows anything, and he didn't do anything, and Haida existed.
And we're just getting
maybe
it.
Maybe we're making it poetic.
And this is what he wants.
This is what
Murakami probably wants.
Yeah.
That's what every artist wants.
It's like that, you know, that manipulation.
David Lynch all over the place. Yes, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Another thing that we are towards the end of the book now as a story, right? Yeah. He finished it then. And let's say about Sara, right? What happened with Sara was, before he left to Finland, he went to get some presents for Kuro, right? And he was sitting there eating a sandwich or whatnot. And he saw the Sarah walking outside, super happy, with this older gentleman holding a hand, right? Yeah. And he felt pain, and he was, like, jealous. Well, he didn't say jealousy, but he was upset, like, oh, she has somebody else. It's true, we are not a true couple, because we have this agreement until I clear my shit. Then we can get in a relationship and all this. But he was still disappointed, right? But then he came back and called her, right? Sarah, and tell her, like, hey, can we meet and all this? No, he said, can we talk? Do you have somebody else? I feel like you have somebody else. And she was like,
we'll talk about it Wednesday.
Yeah, we're talking about it Wednesday.
But the story ends on Tuesday.
Yes.
You don't know anything.
Exactly.
You never figure it out.
And which is, at the end, I was like, because then he's explaining about
the story.
He's explaining about... building the like train stations, and he's there, and it's super interesting what he's talking about, but at the same time it's just give me the Wednesday, I want to know what is happening. You know, I wasn't bored, but at the same time I saw it, it's only two pages, I was like, shit, he's not gonna tell me what's happening on Wednesday.
You don't know,
and
story
this
story ends on Tuesday when it keeps going on Wednesday,
and right now when I think about it, doesn't matter if I know or not.
See, that's the thing, like,
you know,
like stories begin in the middle all the time.
Yeah.
But they never end in the middle. The story ends in the middle.
Yes. Yes.
Because you don't get anything resolved.
It's
nice.
You get resolved some stuff. You get to resolve the story. Because constantly you're catching something that what it needs to... Like... You're catching what it needs to be revealed. And once it's revealed, it doesn't dissolve like its end.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, you know, the listeners are going to think I'm beating a dead horse here, but I'm going to bring up J.J. Abrams' Mystery Box again.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about that before.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is a perfect example of the Mystery Box. He keeps the Mystery Box closed because he doesn't resolve any of the major plot points, but the story is so enjoyable despite the fact that none of the major plot points are resolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he keeps us guessing. He keeps me thinking about it. And then I was even thinking the same thing with Haida. Mm-hmm. Is Sarah real, or is she a figment of his imagination that he needed to go talk to these people?
You know who Sarah reminds me of? The character in your book. Zoe.
Zoe, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's such a... The beauty.
Yeah.
The way he describes it is similar to the way you describe it.
Yeah.
It, that beauty, that something that, like...
Something you needed.
Something you needed. Like, you know what I mean? Something you wanted. That's the way the life should be. You should have her.
But in the scene, yeah. it's not like
the character used her. She's independent on her own. You know, sometimes we get these right. women who
correct.
Are supposed to save the guy.
No.
And that's that.
And I didn't expect that.
She's her own independent thing, and she's giving him a hand.
Yeah.
Just like Zoe did in The Crossing.
Thanks for listening to Between Pages with Mike and Dula.